RockAuto.com, a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is the Locked On NHL Podcast, your Tuesday edition of the show. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres and Mike DiStefano from Locked On Leafs. Mike, you're a big Raptors fan, aren't you?
Oh, yes. Big-time Raptors fan up here in Toronto, and thankfully, hopefully at least, they come back to Toronto. I know the Blue Jays, your Blue Jays, my Blue Jays.
They were my Blue Jays.
They were yours, now back in the rightful home in Toronto. Yeah. I'm actually currently watching their game as we speak on TV here. They're up 4-1 against Cleveland here. But yeah, definitely big-time Raptors fan as well.
So pretty upset, sad. I mean, not upset is the right word. Kyle Lowry leaving to Miami.
Yeah, it is. It's upsetting, right? Like, I'm happy for the guy. I don't think he was going to get that type of deal here in Toronto. But, you know, for them to facilitate something like this, to sign and trade, allow him to go to Miami and compete for a championship. I mean, Toronto, they're not, you know, far away from a championship. But I just think that Toronto wants to go in a little bit of a different direction and kind of retool things for a year or two, or, you know, hand the keys off to Fred VanVleet. So unfortunately, Lowry at what, 35, 36 years old, I don't think the Raptors wanted to commit too many years to him. So, you know, they let him go off to Miami, and I wish him nothing but success.
All right. You mentioned a basketball thing that happens a lot in the NBA that does not in the NHL. Before we got going, we will get into Marc-Andre Fleury deciding to show up in Chicago. We've got a draft idea we want to tease for future episodes on the podcast, as we're really hitting slow season here, August and early September. Also, Evander Kane, all of that that's going on in San Jose. We got to get into him a little bit. But in the NBA, you got signing trades all over the place every year. This year, the big one was former Raptor DeMar DeRozan in a signing trade going from the Spurs to the Chicago Bulls. Didn't it seem like we were maybe going to get one between the Oilers and the Maple Leafs with Zach Hyman?
It did. It was really, really close to happening. And I don't think we've seen them in the NHL. And this year was so close. Hyman, the Edmonton Oilers wanted to get some AAV relief on Hyman's contract, but the only way to get that was to sign him to an 8-year deal. But of course, in free agency as a UFA, you can only sign a maximum of a 7-year term. So the only way to get that 8th year and bring down that AAV for a cap strapped Edmonton team is to get him signed to that 8th year. But the Leafs are the only team that can do that, right? So right, they were talking, Ken Holland and Kyle Dubas talked throughout the draft, and nothing ended up coming of it. There was reports that, you know, Kyle Dubas wanted a second round pick for that cap space. That was the price. And I mean, to be honest, that's kind of the price that was put on cap space this year. You think about most of the trades that Arizona did, where they've just picked up a bounty of second round picks for taking on cap. That just seemed like the price to pay. So that's what he was asking for. Reportedly, Ken Holland was asking for a 6th rounder, and they never came up to a conclusion. I mean, it would have been nice if they settled on like a 3rd or a 4th rounder, maybe. But at the end of the day, Dubas, you know, Ken Holland didn't meet his demands, and he feels like that extra cap space wasn't worth a sixth round pick. He would rather stick them with a higher AAV. And thus we did not get the sign and trade that we all thought we were going to get. And Hyman ended up walking and signing a 7-year deal at $5.5 million, as opposed to an 8-year, $5 million deal that would have, if the sign and trade would have came to fruition.
Yep. By the way, we have not spoken. We do the Tuesday episode, obviously. So we last spoke before free agency. And I know we've tackled it several times on the podcast since then. You got one signing or move that comes to mind immediately is like the most interesting thing that happened in the last 6 days, 7 days since we spoke last.
Oh, I mean, Philip Grubauer signing in Seattle is something I didn't see coming.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are they doing? I mean, real quick. Sorry. I'm sorry to jump in here, but this was driving me crazy the other day that you decided that you didn't want to pay Carey Price $10 million, but you're perfectly okay paying Philip Grubauer and Chris Driedger $9.5 million. Like, I actually think Grubauer in the last 3 years, just on production, not including the playoffs, which does matter here. I'm not saying it doesn't, but in the regular season, Grubauer's been the better goaltender. It's not even really close. Yeah. But Price, I mean, the star power, the marketing, like, if you were going to give $10 million to goaltending, why didn't you just pick Carey Price? That was my thought when I saw that.
I don't know. I think it's, I probably would go for the tandem of Driedger and Philip Grubauer. I mean, it's easier to pay two guys than to have to pay one guy, you know, that type of price, right? Because now you're going to have to go and get a backup, and that could also still be expensive because they were going to bring in Driedger anyways. But I understand where you're coming from here. I get it. That just didn't seem to be what Seattle wanted to do. But there were a couple of things that happened over the last week, and let's just get into this conversation, actually, because this has actually been percolating in my mind, too. Some of the missteps now that we can look back that Seattle did. I mean, take a look at some of the trades that were made after the expansion draft. I mean, they really screwed up when they took, and speaking of goaltenders, they took Vitek Vanacek from the Washington Capitals. But what they left on the board was Brendan Dillon. Brendan Dillon, a few days later, was dealt from Washington to Winnipeg for 2 second round picks.
Yep. That's brutal.
And then it's
straight up brutal.
And then a day later, Seattle trades Vitek Vanacek back to Washington for a third. So they could have had, if they would have just kept, you know, would have just selected Dillon instead of Vanacek, they could have picked up 2 seconds. Instead, they made the wrong decision. They went with Vanacek, thought there'd be a better value out there for trading goaltending prospects. Turns out that wasn't the case because there was a lot in free agency that you could have went out and got, didn't have to give up any premium assets like draft picks for, and they get burned. Instead of having 2 seconds, now they have to settle for one third. And there was a couple other deals that were kind of like that as well. I mean, you take a look again, leaving Jacob Voracek, not taking Voracek, and he gets dealt for Cam Atkinson. Well, I would rather Cam Atkinson over Carson Twarniski or whatever the heck his name is. They thought that was an untradeable contract. Clearly it was not. They got a decent asset, the Philadelphia Flyers did, in Cam Atkinson, and I would much rather that if I was the Seattle Kraken. So there was a couple of moves there that over the course of the week, as the guys who were left unprotected that Seattle didn't claim due to salary cap implications or whatever, that got dealt for a much better return. And then they just didn't capitalize the way that, you know, they could have if they would have selected the players properly.
Yeah. I think they did a pretty poor job also with a lot of asset management. You really could just look at the fact they made no side deals. I mean, nothing. Nope. I'm not saying you had to get the same value Vegas got.
Well, you do have to have a partner, though, right? Like, you do have to have a partner. Like,
really, you couldn't find one? Like, I don't know. That seemed hard to believe.
Apparently not. And now, granted, the asking price was really high to make side deals, which, again, I guess you probably should have softened on it. But it goes back to, do you really want to be known as a pushover? Like, you have a price, and a respect factor, you stick to your guns and you try and get that price. But at the end of the day, like, he, you know, didn't call anybody's bluff. And He was left kind of holding the bag, didn't make a single move. He ended up having a kind of a poor roster selection at the end of the day, but did circle back in free agency and make some decent signings, like Philip Grubauer, like we started the conversation with. Jaden Schwartz was another guy that they brought in. I believe there's one more that they also were able to bring in through free agency, but made a couple of decent additions with the cap space that they did have for not selecting those other players.
Two other notes on Seattle real quick before we move on. I thought it was funny that they drafted Gavin Bayreuther from the Blue Jackets, and then a week later he re-signed back in Columbus. And Seattle had that UFA window before everybody else, so you would have thought, oh, maybe we have a good idea. He's not just going to spurn us and go back to Columbus, but he did. That was not a good look.
No, that was awful. That was another, you know, scenario where they had some better options in Columbus, right, where it was a head scratch that they didn't take them, like a defenseman like Gavrikov or Dean Kukan, somebody who actually had some value to them that could actually play in the NHL. And they opted to go for Gavin Bayreuther, who was not really an NHLer. He's a tweener, I would say, and a pending UFA. And turns out he was willing to go back. So they didn't end up getting any type of asset at all out of Columbus, where they had some legitimate options to select. So, yeah, multiple, I think, missteps there for Seattle.
And the other thing I read was the Grubauer signing kind of came about in that they thought they were getting Gabriel Landeskog. They really thought they were going to land Landeskog, and they not think he was going to land in Colorado. And then he did. And I think, by the way, it would show they thought Colorado was going to put their chips in on Grubauer and not Landeskog. And then when Colorado signed Landeskog, they just kind of went, all right, well, we still got all this cap money. We could go give it to Grubauer because Colorado can't match us on both of them. So they just decided to go, oh, we'll just do that. And so I don't know that Grubauer was really in their plan. I think maybe they just adjusted. They adapted after Landeskog returned to Colorado, which I guess is fine. You know, like, you got to use your cap on something. I don't like the idea of spending that much on goaltending. Also, poor Chris Driedger, right? I mean, I have to imagine he thought he was the starter when he signed there.
Well, I even told you, I think it was the last show we did where, or maybe it was like heading into the draft, where I wasn't so sure. Like, you thought that Driedger, the contract he signed, meant that was it. He was going to be the starter, and that probably negated a Carey Price being selected there. And I said, I don't know about that. Like, he hasn't really earned his stripes in the NHL to say, hey, I'm a clear cut starter. So bringing in somebody like a Grubauer, or, you know, like a Carey Price, who obviously they waived on, but someone like Grubauer to go along with him, I think was a smart call. So that's man's fair. Also making $3.5 million. I don't think I'm going to get it here for Chris Driedger.
No, that's fair, because he also was like an ECHL goaltender like 2 years ago ago. Yeah. So you're right. I don't feel that bad for him. And you do make a good point. Like, you did say last week, like, it didn't take them out of the price running, and they showed their hand, or they proved it that this week that, you know, price was already out the window, but they didn't feel entitled to give Driedger the number one job. He'll still play games, no doubt, at $3.5 million, but they're going to have a good 1A, 1B system, I think, there in net. Speaking of goaltending, I can get to Marc-Andre Fleury here. Were you surprised he ended up going to Chicago? The wind seemed to be blowing originally that he wouldn't, but my thought was maybe he really wanted to push his way to Pittsburgh at all costs. And then once he realized the Penguins weren't really interested in that idea, he looked around and thought, all right, it's retirement, or, you know, who needs a starting goalie still? Because, like, the Sabres have Craig Anderson, but, I mean, you'd rather retire than go there at this point. And I don't love Chicago, but they certainly improved this offseason. And there was nowhere else in the league, I thought, that he could have landed to where he'd be starting and have some chance to win. So I guess it did. It wasn't stunning to me that he ended up saying, all right, I'll show up and I'll be your starting goalie.
I don't know. I never really thought that he was going to retire. I don't know if I actually gave it as much thought as I probably should have. I just kind of assumed, you know, he's going to think about it. But at the end of the day, like, he's coming off a Vezina caliber season. I don't think he's done. I don't think he's going to leave the money on the table. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up coming back and signing another contract next year. I know he's a little bit older, but like he still is playing at a very good level, like an elite level, a Vezina caliber level. So I don't know if I actually ever anticipated him to actually walk away from the game, although he was very upset to be traded. Clearly, you know, he when he penned his letter to Vegas fans, there was no mention of the organization. He didn't thank anyone from the organization. Clearly really upset with the fact that he got dealt. But I mean, I still don't see the Chicago Blackhawks, though, as a winning team. Like, I don't – they might sneak into the playoffs, into the back half, just because I don't think it's an overly strong division that they're in. So they may sneak in, but I don't think this is a Stanley Cup contender. So I don't envision another Stanley Cup in Fleury's future when it comes to being with the Chicago Blackhawks. I don't know if winning was it. I think he just wants to keep playing hockey.
In that division, I think they would probably be, I mean, they're definitely closer to the bottom for me than the top, even with adding Seth Jones and Marc-Andre Fleury. I would obviously put Colorado above them. I would put Minnesota above them. It might be easier to pick the teams I'd go below them. I mean, Arizona I'd put below them. I'd probably maybe do Nashville at this point, although, man, I love me some UC Soros. So, I don't know. Chicago, it really will probably just come down to what version of Marc-Andre Fleury they get. And even if it's Vezina-caliber Marc-Andre Fleury, I probably only see them as a playoff team. I do not see them as a Stanley Cup contender in any way. Yeah. And if bad Fleury shows up, because Fleury, if you look at his production the last few years, it's really every other year. Last year, he was a Vezina winner. The year before that, he was down at the bottom of the league in save percentage, and Robin Lehner had to come in and start and play in the playoffs. The year before that, and the year before that, so really the 2 years before that, he was really strong in Vegas. And then the year prior in Pittsburgh was the year that his numbers tanked and Matt Murray took over the net. So it depends. If bad Fleury shows up, that team's going to stink. So I don't know. Chicago, maybe there's not a lot to figure out there. At this point, I think they're probably going to contend for the playoffs, but the days of them being a Stanley Cup contender to me are dead.
Did you also see that? It's not a foregone conclusion that Jonathan Toews comes back to start the season either. They're still kind of seeing what his future is going to be. And that's obviously a major wrinkle in what happens in Chicago as well.
How is that not being talked about more, by the way? This guy's career might be about one of a legend in the NHL whose career at 33 years old, it's not like he's that old, is being derailed by COVID symptoms. I mean, I feel like that should be a bigger story.
Yeah, I'm with you because like for a long time, he was considered one of the best players in the NHL. I mean, he was like the top shutdown center in the NHL. Like he was like him and Patrice Bergeron were the two premier shutdown centermen in the NHL. And you know, the past couple of seasons, his offensive numbers have dipped. His play has dipped a little bit, but I mean, he's still Jonathan Toews. He's still the captain of the Chicago Blackhawks and, you know, didn't play at all last year. His you know, future's a little bit in doubt at this point. They don't know when he's going to return this season. Right. Yeah, I agree, man. This is a story that probably should be talked about a little bit more. Maybe at some point during the offseason, we can get our good friend Jack from Locked On Blackhawks on to get the latest and see if he's hearing any rumblings within the Chicago realm.
If you have not tried a Built Bar yet, I strongly encourage you to do so as somebody that did not eat protein bars because of the taste. And as somebody, am I a candy snob? Am I an aficionado? I don't know. I eat a lot, not as much anymore. Growing up, a lot of candy bars. And I'm telling you, Built Bar is a candy bar. It's not. It tastes like one, though. You have 18 amazing flavors to pick from, including 6 new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. If you go for the coconut almond puff flavor, that is my favorite. And I'm not even a coconut guy, but it's like eating a Mallow cup. That's how good it is. Built Bars are also great for the healthy conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for keto diets. For example, the peanut butter flavor, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, only 5 grams of sugar and only 5 grams net carbs. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you will get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Let's switch over to, well, we're already kind of in the West, but let's go to the West Coast for our next story to tackle here. And this one is, there's a lot here. Evander Kane. He's getting into it with his, what he's calling his ex-wife on social media. She accused him of betting on hockey, of throwing games. Kane is somebody that he filed bankruptcy in January. And in those listings, he declared $1.3 million in gambling losses the 12 months prior. He admitted that he is in counseling for gambling. Robin Leonard, his former teammate here in Buffalo, came to his defense on Twitter, and he did admit that, yes, Kane has gambled on sports before, but to his knowledge, he had never gambled on hockey, let alone on a team that he was playing on. So all of this is going on. The league, of course, is investigating. They have to investigate when something like this is happening. And also compounded with all of that is a report from Kevin Kurz of The Athletic today that Sharks teammates don't want several Sharks teammates, not the whole Sharks, but several Sharks teammates do not want Kane back on the team next season, and that the Sharks have been exploring and have been trying to trade Kane this summer. Now, I don't know. How do you think this ends for Kane? I can't imagine that he gets like banned from the sport, because I really think anything is on the table at this point, because we don't really know what the truth is.
I mean, why don't you ask Pete Rose what he thinks of you know, what happens when you get caught betting on your sports? It doesn't go well. I can tell you that. I don't know, man. Like, this is a really fascinating story. And I did see the report, too, that there were some teammates that don't want him around. Even like when he was in Buffalo and when he was in Winnipeg, he's always kind of had a little bit of a stench to him when it comes to the locker room. So it may not even be gambling related, but like, I don't see it going well. I don't think it'll get to the point where his contract gets terminated, but
right,
it's going to be interesting to see what ends up happening here. What do you think happens?
I think his contract could be terminated. I think that could happen.
If it does turn out that, like, if they could prove that he was betting on his games,
then he absolutely is banned. Yes. He's not even terminated. He's banned.
Exactly. Like Pete Rose, like Pete Rose style.
Right.
But like, that's going to be really tough to figure out. Like, there's going to be an investigation. Obviously the NHL said that, and I guess they'll figure it out. But in terms of, like, I don't know if the problem with it too is like, look at the source, yep, right? Like, the source is the ex-wife or ex-girlfriend?
Ex-wife, yeah.
Okay, so ex-wife. I'm, you know, it's usually sometimes really tricky when you try to take the word of, like, the exes, okay, because sometimes they could just be looking to stick it to the man. You know, stick it to Vander for being, maybe it's a poor husband. I'm not saying, I have absolutely no idea what he was like, but clearly it didn't work out for their marriage. And now she wants to get some sort of revenge on him. And she could just be saying this. But of course, the problem is that he does have a history with gambling. But gambling isn't illegal if he's just, you know, going playing blackjack, or if he's gambling on UFC, or he's gambling on football or basketball. That's not illegal. That's not a problem.
Right.
But if it does come out that he has been gambling on games, and especially games that he was playing in, that's where this becomes a massive issue. And that's where it comes to determination. I don't know. Like, how are they going to figure that out? Like, he would be stupid enough to do this with, like, a casino that has, like, logged books. Like, there's probably some offshore bookie, I would assume.
Well, even those places, I think you can find receipts. I mean, unless he's got, like, a literal, you know, back alley bookie, I think there's got to be receipts of stuff like that everywhere. Because even those offshore accounts are, like, websites that would have receipts.
Right, but he could be using, like, fake aliases or whatever. But, I mean, right, and if that's the case, that's going to be really tough to prove. But if he's, you know, dumb enough where he's walking into MGM and he's laying $10,000 on, you know, the Sharks losing against the Canucks or whatever it is, the Sharks losing against Anaheim, like that's going to be a problem, right? If they somehow prove that he's been betting on those games, that's going to be a big time issue. But it's going to be interesting, man, because like Evander Kane, there's been just a lot of stuff has gone on in this guy's career. And I just wonder if he does get terminated, is like, or even if he doesn't get terminated, if the team doesn't want him around, what happens? Like, is there going to be another team that's going to want to bring this guy in who is known as somewhat of a locker room cancer to this point in his career? And he's got a pretty big cap hit. He's at what, $6-7 million?
$7 million for the next 4 years. And he's 30 years old. Now, he is coming off a career season, almost a point a game and more assists than goals, which he did, I think, for the first time in his career, second time in his career since he was like 19. He's definitely coming off a great season on the ice. And I always defended him here because I thought he came with that reputation that happened in Winnipeg. And I think in Winnipeg, it was probably deserved. I don't think he was ever a locker room problem in Buffalo. I think he actually got along great with the guys in the locker room, like Eichel and Leonard and O'Reilly, and say what you want about those guys in their own right and whether they were locker room pops. So maybe it could just be a collection of guys that are all the same. But whatever, whatever you say about those guys, they all got along and they were all, you know, they were fine with each other when he was here. But now he's in San Jose and now this is coming out and you do have what happened in Winnipeg, and he obviously has a gambling issue like that. That can't be disputed that he admitted he's in counseling and he had to file for bankruptcy because he's got $24 million in debt. The guy has made some really bad decisions and I don't know if he gets traded. I don't know if he can be traded because even though he was that good, you're right. Like who's going to want that? Who's going to want that at $7 million? I saw someone try to compare his situation to Anthony DeAngelo in Carolina and how does D'Angelo get a second chance? Right. But nobody's going to trade for Evander Kane. Well, that's a money thing. Anthony D'Angelo costs Carolina 1 year, $1 million. They can really get rid of that whenever they want. Whereas Kane, you're taking on a big investment and you got to hope even if you trade for him, let alone all the off the ice risk, he's 30 years old. He could be shot in 2 years. That's around the time where that cliff comes for wingers like that. So I wouldn't want to trade for him as the hockey player, let alone the person at this point. So I think if his contract's not terminated, I think he's stuck. I think he's in San Jose. I don't know what else you do with him.
That's a really good point. That's a good point. Is there a team out there that you know, put the off ice stuff aside, someone who wants to take on that salary for the next little bit? I don't know. Like
hefty. Now
Carolina comes to mind just because, you know, the whole Tony D'Angelo thing, potentially Montreal, I guess, could also come
to mind. They there. Absolutely deserve to be thrown in here right now at this moment in time.
Yeah. Right. Like those are the two teams that kind of have made some questionable choices, character choices within their organization over the last little bit. But it's going to be a fascinating story to watch because, like, now that it's also public that there are teammates that don't want him here, it'll be curious to see how everything, like, the Sharks could also just sit there and be like, you know what? Our team isn't really going to be doing anything anyways. We don't want to poison this locker room more than it may already be. Yep. Like, just stay home. Like, if we can't find a trade, kind of like what the Rangers did with D'Angelo this season, where they said, look, if we can't find something for you, can't find a trade for you, then stay home. We'll buy you out at the end of the year. If not, something happens where, you know, he's implicated and then his contract just gets terminated. But right. You know, those might be his only options. Either everything gets swept under the rug and he plays, or he gets sent home and bought out at the end of the year.
If they buy him out at the end of the year, he'll count as $3.6 million against the cap in 2022-23, $2.6 million the year after that, $4.6 million in 24-25, and then $1.6 million for the next 3 years. So it's not great in year one of the buyout and year three of the buyout, but 1.6 million is not that bad, especially with the cap going up. So I think that's a very realistic, if not likely, outcome that'll happen. That sit home and then he'll be bought out eventually. Now, one other quick thing I want to throw in here. This is credit to Patrick Bacon at Top Down Hockey on Twitter. He speculated, just theorizing, nothing that's been reported on this front. If it came about where Kane's contract was terminated, the Sharks would have $14 million in cap room. And he made the case, because they're locked in on so many veteran players, like Logan Couture has got like 7 years left at $8 million at 32 years old. And Erik Karlsson's got like 7 years, 6 years left at 31 years old at $11.5 million. And Brent Burns, 4 years at $8 million at 36. Vlasic, 5 years left at $7 million at 34. You're kind of locked in and you almost don't have a choice. Like, you can't blow it up. Nobody's eating those contracts. You've got to go for it. This Patrick said they should trade for Jack Eichel, and they wouldn't even have to give up any salary if they did it. And the way the Eichel situation is going right now, you might be able to get him real cheap. So I don't know. How does the Sharks on the surface, before I even say anything else about them, maybe hearing this for the first time, do they strike you as a team that if Kane gets terminated should go after something like that, go for a big move?
Yeah. Like, if it's going to be cost efficient, which it seems like it at this point is, like you said. So, I mean, that might end up being a potential outcome if he does end up getting bought out, or he does end up getting terminated or something like that, and that cap space becomes available. But it's so funny. You're rattling off all these players with these high cap hits that are now on the other side of 30 and declining. And I remember a couple of years ago, this would have been the summer that Tavares was in free agency, and they were hot and heavy after JT. I think he was rumored, like, he left money on the table in San Jose to come to Toronto. Like, they were offering him like $13 million a season or something like that. Could you imagine somehow putting that money on the books, and how much in an even worse situation they would be in cap wise if that were the case? Like,
how would they have even done that? How would they fit that in at this point?
That was my conversation I was having the entire time. I'm like, listen, how can they possibly sign Tavares? Like, look at their cap structure as is. That was even like Pavelski was still on the team at that point, making $7-8 million a year. Thornton was making good money at that point too, with the Sharks. It just didn't make any sense how that was possibly going to work. And then going forward, they had, you know, Brent Burns and Vlasic and all of these guys who you figure 2 years from now, it's not going to look pretty. So if they have like a 1, maybe 2 year window to win, that's probably not in like Tavares's, you know, thought process. And I think ultimately that's why he left the Sharks and then went to Toronto. Like,
yeah, I know what would have happened. They wouldn't have traded for Karlsson. The Karlsson trade came after Tavares. I guess that's what would have been replaced with. Right.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And still that would have been
awful contracts on the books even before the Karlsson one.
That's right. And I think that actually might have been an upgrade for them. Karlsson, man, I mean, ever since he got that plate put in his ankle, I mean, he's just not the same at all. And he's so expensive. He can't go left. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? He can't go left now. Like, he's got that ankle. So if you go left on him and people found the book on him, it's very easy to zip past him and he can't do anything about it. He just can't.
It's tough
for my fantasy team too. All for him a couple of years ago. Yeah. And it's not working out too well. I think I think Couturier was like included in the deal as well. And Couturier has gone on to have himself quite the couple of seasons. So fantasy wise.
Hey, dude, nothing will ever top in the Dynasty League when I traded Nathan MacKinnon at a trade deadline to go all in and win a championship. This was after his third year. He had 52 points in 72 games that year. So he was not the elite player that he was now. I traded him for Phil Kessel.
I
got one good year out of that. Because even the next year, MacKinnon was a 50-point player again. Ever since, it's like the worst trade you've ever seen in your life.
MacKinnon's
like the second best player in hockey, and Kessel is, I mean, he's not utterly useless, but he's nowhere near what he used to be.
Well, he would have been with the Leafs at that point, too. So I know all about what Phil Kessel was like back in 2015.
about that. All right. Well, again, I mentioned at the beginning of the show that we're going to be entering a slow month here in the month of August. There's probably not a lot of things that are going to happen. I guess a Jack Eichel trade could happen at any point, but nothing like that seems like it's close. So I think we got a neat idea that we're going to be doing over the next few weeks in the month of August. Me and Mike here on the Tuesday edition of Locked On NHL, dueling mock drafts for each division. Dueling mock, not quite, I don't want to even say fantasy. It's like we're building all-star teams for each division, 19 skaters. We can pick coach and GM, right? But I think this is going to be a fun exercise.
I'm excited about it. I do. And maybe we should even put it to the test in like the video game, put in like NHL 21. We'll draft two teams and play against each other and see who wins. And then we can have bragging rights for a little bit after that. But no, that should be a lot of fun. I you know, we're both massive like fantasy draft nuts. Yep. So it's going to be a fun little exercise that I think we'll dig pretty deep and, you know, get ourselves a couple of big teams.
You're fantasy obsessed. I think I have two drafts left, which will bring me to 10 fantasy teams this year, just fantasy football. And that does not include my fantasy hockey team. That's not include my fantasy golf team. So fantasy obsessive, I am fantasy obsessive.
How many dynasty hockey leagues are you in, Joe?
I'm only in one, actually. I'm in one dynasty hockey league and I'm in one redraft league and that's it. Okay. The dynasty league is an interesting one though. It's kind of a different format, but yeah.
I love it. Like if you guys aren't in a dynasty hockey league and you are a hockey nut, get involved in one. And if you're listening to the show, you probably are. I mean, if you're looking for daily hockey podcasts, you're probably a big time hockey nut. And they're so much fun, man. Like, because I don't know if you use Fantrax or Yahoo, but I'm on Fantrax. It's a really solid site. And it's like a super deep league. I think we've got 16 teams with 46 man rosters. You have like a 20 man rookie roster with a minor league roster. And it's just a lot of fun. And I'm actually in the middle of doing our rookie draft right now for one of my leagues, just about halfway through the first round. And there's a couple of guys. I'm curious to get your thoughts on some sleepers in the first round of a rookie draft for this year's hockey. I know it's completely, just brought this to your attention, but have you given it any thought to who might be some good rookie fantasy guys from this year's draft?
I haven't thought about it like for one second. I know the guys, like William Eklund would be the first name that comes to mind for me. But this is guys that are going to be in the league or they were just drafted?
Just drafted. So yeah, because right. We have our minors roster, right? So funny enough, Mason McTavish was the first overall pick in the rookie draft, which I think is interesting because this is like a multi-category league. And Mason McTavish, you know, I think can be a multi-cat stud. So I thought that was a savvy pick by the team who selected him first overall. And Matty Beniers fell all the way to 5, which surprised me. I love it, man. I absolutely love rookies, drafts, prospects, and fantasy hockey. So
I'm going to be, I think this, especially with where the Sabres are right now, this happened for me 6 years ago when they went to the bottom really on purpose, was I got real invested in the college hockey product and junior hockey and like a lot of the prospects that were coming through the league. And obviously 6 years ago, I mean, I made 20 plus trips down to Erie to watch Connor McDavid play over 2 seasons. Nice. And me and buddies have already talked about, I know this is for next year's draft. Me and buddies have already talked about when we're going to see Shane Wright play. And I mean, fingers crossed, the border is supposed to open for fully vaccinated Americans on September 7th. And we're talking more about the winter. So, I mean, we'll see if the border remains open through the winter. I know the Delta variant's got a lot of people scared with COVID right now. Like masks are coming back here in Buffalo. But if the border is open, like I'm going to be coming up there. So if you want to meet me in Hamilton or go see the Kingston Frontenacs against the Niagara Ice Dogs, I'm going to be getting really into a lot of these prospects this year. So
absolutely, Joe. Well, I'll definitely have to do it. You'll have to bring over some chicken wings and some beer, some cheap beer from America.
Yes.
We'll watch ourselves a quality.
We'll do a trade. We'll do a trade. I'll bring some cheap beer and you bring some ketchup chips.
Oh,
love me some ketchup chips. I've only had hers, but I think that's the good brand anyway, right?
No, Lay's
Lay's.
Yeah, Lay's ketchup chips is okay. Is pretty fantastic.
Okay, I'll have to have Lay's because I've only had hers before.
Also, you need to have a flaky as well, a passion flaky.
I don't think I know what that is.
Oh, it's Google it, my friend.
Passion, passion flaky. Yes. That almost sounds like something I don't want to Google.
How's it not sound?
No, it does. I'm looking at it right now. It's almost like a pie looking thing.
Yeah, it's like a little flaky crust thing.
Oh,
like
that looks pretty good.
And like strawberry filling in the middle. It's got some sugar on top. It's really good, Joe.
And just on by looking at it, it reminds me of like the McDonald's pies that they have. I think these probably are flakier than that.
Yeah, this is more airy. It's not filled. It's very airy, actually.
All right. I like the sound of that. Yeah. All right. What do you got planned for Locked On Leafs coming up in the next few days and weeks?
So I don't know if you were talking, but we've talked a lot about prospects and stuff over the last 5 minutes or so. But did you get a chance to watch any of the World Junior Summer Showcase that went down last week?
I did not, unfortunately, no.
So to be honest, neither did I. But I did book a guest to come on and talk about it who did attend, Chris Peters, who's someone who you might know.
Yep.
Yeah, so I got Chris Peters actually coming on Locked On Leafs tomorrow. He's going to chat a little bit about a trio of Maple Leafs who made really strong impressions at the tournament. So, yeah, I'm really excited and kind of get his thoughts on you know, what's going on in general. And he might be a good guy for a lot of American listeners, too, because clearly he's going to be chatting a lot about what the American junior team was all about down there. So go check that out. Locked On Leafs. That'll be probably out either tomorrow or perhaps Thursday morning.
All right. That sounds a lot more fun than what we're doing on Locked On Sabres. I read like 5 medical journals about artificial disc replacement surgery and fusion neck surgery, and talked a lot about Eichel's neurosurgeon that went on with Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick over the weekend. And I'm diving in especially to all that's going on between the Sabres and Eichel right now with this surgery dispute and what's going to happen. I mean, it's going to be rough. And then we'll get into some fun stuff. I think we're going to review. I promised that I will watch the Mighty Ducks for the first time this month, and we will review it. I know it's sacrilegious that I'm allowed to have a hockey podcast and I've never seen the Mighty Ducks, but that will end this month, I promise. So that's what we got coming up.
We have this conversation before?
I think we have, but it's probably been a long time, so I'm not sure you remember it.
Well, I remember I sent out a tweet. I can't remember which draft prospect it was, but they got drafted to like the Anaheim Ducks, and it wasn't Mason McTavish. It was somebody else. I think it was in the second round, and they were like, are you happy to be, you know, with the Ducks? Like, do you remember the Mighty Ducks movies? Like, no, I've never seen them. And I'm like, oh no, we are now at the era where these drafted prospects have not seen the Mighty Ducks. And like, I grew up on the Mighty Ducks growing up in the 90s. And it's actually disheartening to hear, Joe, that you did not.
That's not age for me. That's just, I don't have a good excuse. I don't even have a good excuse for it.
Sheer ignorance, Joe. Sheer ignorance.
Not good. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today on the Tuesday edition of the Locked On NHL podcast. Come back for the Friday edition of the show, where I believe we're officially going to announce who my new Friday co-host is going to be filling in for Tom Gazzola, who went on to other ventures, my former Friday host on Locked On NHL. So I will talk to you Friday. Me and Mike will talk to you next Tuesday here on the Locked On NHL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.